taking her arm and guiding her into the crowd.
Who's going to care about a planet destroyed almost half a century ago?
Shada's stomach tightened. Kamas. And Emberlyn.
No one.
She agreed bitterly.
No one at all.
It took a while, at least two complete read-throughs each, Deesra estimated, as he slowly paced the floor behind his Eve Roy desk, trying to look impatient rather than apprehensive. But eventually, the last of the four Imperial captains finished reading and lifted his eyes from his datapad.
With all due respect, Your Excellency, I find this proposal incredible,
Captain Trazin of the Obliterator said, his soft voice belying his reputation for viciousness.
Surely you realize that you can't simply pull four Imperial Star Destroyers out of a sector fleet and expect the remaining forces to adequately defend their territory.
I agree,
Captain Nogal of the Tyrannic put in, fingering the Kuat family crest ring he always wore.
In addition, and also with due respect, I would go so far as to question your authority to even order these two missions. All incursions into New Republic space are supposed to be under the direct command of Supreme Fleet Commander Pelion.
Perhaps, Deesra said. Perhaps not. We'll put that aside for a moment. Are there other questions?
I have one, Captain Dorja of the Relentless spoke up. This mission to Morishim that you want me to go on. What exactly is this courier ship I'm being asked to intercept?
Deesra lifted his eyebrows.
Being asked, Captain? Being asked?
Yes, Your Excellency, Dorja said stiffly. Captain Nalgol is correct. You are Supreme Commander of the Braxent Sector Fleet only, with regard to operations within Braxent Sector. Missions to Morishim and Bothawi do not fall under this authority.
I see.
Deesra looked at the fourth captain.
You've been rather quiet, Captain Argana.
The Iron Hand is, of course, under your command, Your Excellency, and we'll go wherever you send us,
Argana said quietly.
At the same time, I have to concur with Captain Trazin's assessment. Sending away four of the Sector Fleet's 13 Star Destroyers is not something to be done lightly.
Especially with three of them on this long-term mission to the Bothawi system,
Trazin added.
The nature of which, I remind you, precludes any chance of a quick recall.
Indeed, Argana said. You'd have to physically send couriers out there to contact us. In an emergency, the extra days that would cost would prove disastrous.
Nothing worthwhile is ever gained without risk, Deesra said coldly. I'm beginning to think that perhaps a wrong choice has been made in offering these missions to you. If you'd prefer to bow out of a history-making military campaign...
No.
The voice had come from the direction of Deesra's secret passageway. The captains turned, and Grand Admiral Thrawn stepped into the office. There was a gasp from someone, choked off into a stunned silence.
Excuse me, Admiral? Deesra asked carefully.
I said they will not be excused from this mission, Your Excellency,
Thrawn said, his voice calm and cool, as he walked to the desk and sat down in Deesra's chair.
I had my reasons for choosing these particular Star Destroyers and their captains. Those reasons have not changed.
For a moment, his glowing eyes focused on the captains as they stood at obviously confused attention before him, measuring and evaluating each in turn. Then, leaning back in his seat, he smiled slightly.
"Observe, Your Excellency," he said, looking up at Deesra and waving a hand at the officers. "Utterly stunned by my unexpected appearance, yet already they are largely recovered. Quick and flexible minds, combined with utter loyalty to the Empire."
That is the combination I need. The combination I will have.
Of course, Admiral, Deesra said. Thrawn turned his attention back to the captains.
You have questions, of course, he said. Unfortunately, the one foremost in all your minds cannot at this time be answered. As I make preparations to return to open command, the method which allowed me to survive the assassination attempt 10 years ago must remain confidential. I must also ask that for the moment my return be kept a secret, to be shared only with your senior officers, and that only after you've left Imperial space. Other than that, he cocked his head slightly to the side, I believe there were some questions about command authority.
No questions, Admiral, Trazin said, his voice almost reverent. Not anymore.
Good.
Thrawn cocked a blue-black eyebrow at Nalgol.
I take it from your expression, Captain Nalgol, that you don't concur with your colleague.
Nalgol cleared his throat self-consciously, his finger squeezing his ring as if trying to extract confidence from the carved crest.
I certainly don't question your authority, Admiral Thrawn, he said. But I would very much appreciate some clarification. I'm familiar with the Bothawi system, and I can think of no reason why it should be of any serious military value to the Empire. Certainly not worth tying up 3 Star Destroyers for.
Your evaluation is quite correct, Thrawn agreed. It's not the system itself that interests me, but events which in the near future will be taking place over the Bothan homeworld. Events which I intend to turn to the Empire's advantage.
Yes, sir,
Nalgol said.
But
in time all will be clear, Thrawn said. For now I must ask that you trust my judgment.
Nalgol drew himself to his full height.
Always, Admiral.
He stepped forward and offered his hand across the desk.
And if I may say so, welcome back. The Empire has sorely missed your leadership.
As I've missed the privilege of command, Thrawn said,
rising to his feet and gripping the proffered hand briefly.
The refitting of your 3 Star Destroyers is already underway, and should be completed within 2 days.
He shifted his attention to Dorja.
As for your mission, Captain Dorja, the Imperial courier you're to intercept at Morishim is scheduled to leave in 20 hours. Will you have enough time to return to the Relentless and reach the system ahead of it?
Easily, Admiral.
Dorja's lip twitched in what passed for a smile with him these days.
And if I may, sir, I'd like to echo Captain Nalgol's sentiments.
I'm honored to once again serve under your direct command.
Deesra looked at Dorja, his chest suddenly feeling tight. Dorja had served directly under Thrawn?
I'm pleased to once again lead you, Captain, Thrawn said gravely. During my time on the Chimera, I often felt that you had more leadership potential than circumstances allowed you to develop. Perhaps we'll have the opportunity now to judge that evaluation.
Dorja fairly glowed.
I'll do my best to prove you right, sir.
I can ask no more than your best, Thrawn said. And we'll accept nothing less, he added, looking at each of the captains in turn. You have your orders. Dismissed.
Yes, Admiral,
Trazin said for all of them. They turned and left, with what seemed to Deesra to be a markedly more spirited step than that with which they'd entered the office half an hour earlier. The double doors swung ponderously shut behind them.
A fine group of gentlemen, Flim declared, digging a finger into the collar of his white Grand Admiral's uniform. A bit gullible, perhaps, but fine gentlemen all the same.
Oh, they're fine, all right,
Deesra snarled, glaring at the secret door the con man had made his grand entrance through.
They're also extremely dangerous. Tears,
Where are you?
Right here,
Tyr said, stepping out of the secret door.
What's the matter?
What's the matter? Deesra snapped. Bad enough that three of the four captains you picked for these missions aren't particularly loyal to me, but someone who served directly with Thrawn? Are you insane?
Don't be insulting,
Tyr said coldly, joining the others by the desk.
I had to bring in someone like Dorja on this. A junior student of tactics could tell you that.
I don't think tactically, Deesra shot back. At least not according to you. That's why your expertise is so necessary, remember?
Calm down, Your Excellency, Flim interjected, carefully popping the glowing surface insert out of his left eye. Sooner or later, it was inevitable that I face someone who personally knew Thrawn.
What better time or place than here, where all four of them could have been dealt with quietly and discreetly if necessary?
Exactly, Tyr said. And as to my choice of commanders, those not personally loyal to you are precisely the ones we need to work Flim's magic on.
And have you considered what they might do once they're out of range of that magic? Deesra countered. What if they decide they're not really convinced after all, and do some checking?
Oh, they're going to,
Tyrs assured him.
That was why I wanted Nalgol to be in the first group. He comes from a long line of Kuat nobility, and I knew he'd be wearing his poison injector ring.
Flim paused midway through popping out the other surface insert.
His what?
His poison injector ring,
Tyrs repeated.
Poisoning one's enemies is a centuries-old tradition there. Oh, relax. Nalgol hasn't carried any poison in that ring for years.
I'm glad you think so,
Flim said irritably, examining his hand closely where Nalgol had gripped it.
It wasn't your hand he came over and...
I said relax,
Tyr said again, and this time there was an edge to his voice.
He wasn't putting anything in. He was taking something out.
A small skin sample, to be exact, Deesra said, finally catching on. Which he'll undoubtedly take straight over to the archives to compare against the genetic profile in Thrawn's ID records.
Exactly,
Tyr said.
And once he's convinced, and he'll certainly share his findings with the others, there will be literally nothing they won't do for us.
I wondered why you were so insistent we get those ID records altered last night, Deesra said. Not exactly a large margin of error built into that operation.
Especially considering the two of us were taking all the risks, Flim seconded, still cradling his hand. You weren't even in the room with us.
Calm down, both of you,
Tyr said, a hint of contempt in his tone.
There's a long way yet to go on this. I hope you're not losing your nerve already.
Don't worry about our nerve, Major, Deesra bit out. You just worry about this strategy of yours actually working.
It will,
Tyr assured him.
Trust me. Whatever the preliminary skirmishes, the opening battle of the Rebellion's final civil war will be fought over Bothawe. The Kaamaas document will ensure that. We want to orchestrate the details of that blow-up as best we can, and we want an Imperial presence at Bothawe to make sure the damage to both sides is as extensive as possible.
Well, whatever we do, we'd better do it quickly, Deesra warned. Pellion's already three-quarters of the way to making my connection to the Kavrilu pirates and their associates. If he does a check and finds my sector fleet missing four Star Destroyers, he's going to be all over me.
There's not much we can do about the timetable,
Tyr reminded him.
The three heading to the Bothawe system won't be in attack position for several weeks.
Then perhaps we should scrap the comet aspect, Deesra said. They can form up around some other marker.
There isn't one,
Tyr said patiently.
At least nothing that would be safe for them to use. You'll just have to use your native charm to keep Pellion at bay.
I'll do my best, Deesra said sarcastically. And what sort of charm would you suggest I use on Captain Zothip?
What's wrong with Captain Zothip? Flim asked.
Major Tierce called and told him we were cutting off their supply of clones, Deesra growled. Zothip is rather upset.
We've been through this once already,
Tierce said with an air of strained patience.
We need those clones ourselves now. Zothip has no cause to complain. He's benefited well enough from having them aboard his ships. Anyway, what are you worried about? That he'll come here and demand satisfaction?
You don't know Zothip, Deesra said heavily.
He's scum from the fringe,
Tyr said, dismissing the pirate with a twist of his lip.
Buy him off or calm him down. I don't care which.
I'm less worried about Zothip than I am about your attitude, Deesra countered. From now on, major decisions like this are going to be made jointly. I won't have you tearing down things I've built and then handing me the pieces to put back together.
For a long moment, Tierce just looked at him.
Let's get one thing straight right now, Deesra, he said at last, his voice icy smooth. I'm in command of the military aspects of this operation. All of them. That's what you offered me. And that's what I'm taking. Your part right now, your only part right now, is to supply the ships and men I need, and to handle any political aspects that crop up.
Deesra glared again at him, but it was a glare whose edge he could feel blunting. Just what sort of monster had he created here?
Is that all I am to you? He asked Tierce quietly. Your supply, officer.
Tierce smiled, a cold twitch of the corner of his lip.
Afraid you've lost control of this scheme you've created? Don't be. My goal here, my only goal, is to avenge the Emperor's death and wipe the rebellion off every map of the galaxy. After that, my job is done. Ruling the new empire that emerges will be entirely up to you.
For a moment, Deesra eyed him, trying to read past his stony expression, trying not to let wishful thinking color his judgment. The man was lying. No. Tierce was a soldier. An uncommonly good one, but a soldier nonetheless. He had nowhere near the political skills or experience Deesra himself possessed. Even if he grew to like the taste of power, he would still need Deesra after the fighting was over.
Most triumvirates are unstable, Your Excellency, Flim spoke up. I know. I've seen many of them rise and collapse among pirate and smuggler organizations of the fringe. But this one is different. None of us can make it work without both of the others.
He's right,
Tierce agreed.
So shut up your whining and do your part, or it'll be penal colonies for all of us.
Agreed, Deesra said reluctantly. My apologies, Major. It won't happen again.
Good,
Tierce said briskly.
Back to business. I'm going to need a copy of the decryption algorithm you used to slice into the Emperor's and Thrawn's private records.
Deesra frowned.
What for?
So that I can pull a complete list of the sleeper cells Thrawn planted around the rebellion,
Tierce explained.
We're going to need all the trained Imperial soldiers and pilots we can get our hands on.
That seemed reasonable enough.
All right, Deesra said. But I can pull the list for you.
It would be useful if I could get into those files myself whenever I needed to,
Tierce pointed out.
It would also be useful for me to know a few things that you don't, Deesra countered. For the sake of balance and all.
Tierce shook his head.
Fine. Go ahead and play your little games. Just get me that list.
Deesra inclined his head in an ironic bow.
Immediately, Major.
No,
There would be no more outbursts, Deesret decided, as he walked back across the office to the secret tunnel. But that didn't mean he wouldn't keep a close eye on his partners in this triumvirate. And if they both still needed him, the time might well come when he no longer needed them. It was something to think about. Chapter 6. She was short, she was furry, she was loud, and she was determined to sell him a melon.
"Sorry,"
Wedge Antilles said, moving away as best he could in the press of the crowded Morishim marketplace, holding his hands palms outward in front of him.
"Not interested in Waku melons today. Thanks."
Either the female Moorish didn't understand basic, or else she wasn't ready to concede defeat quite yet. She followed along with him behind her produce table, paralleling his retreat, thrusting the double bulbous pale red melon toward him and jabbering away non-stop in her own language.
"Not today,"
Wedge repeated firmly, looking around and trying to catch a glimpse of any of his Rogue Squadron teammates in the crowd of shoppers. Jansen and Tycho were supposed to know a little of the Moorish language, but neither of them was anywhere to be seen. But there was a gap freshly opened up in the pedestrian traffic pattern beside him.
"Maybe tomorrow,"
he called to the Waku seller, and made his escape.
"For a big bad X-Wing warrior, you're sure rotten at saying no," Jansen's voice said from behind him.
"I didn't buy it, did I?"
Wedge countered, turning to face his grinning teammate.
"Where were you when I needed you?"
"Oh, I caught most of the show," Jansen said, grinning a little wider. "I especially like the part where you gave her that palms outward sign."
Wedge felt his eyes narrow.
"That doesn't mean no here?"
"Not quite," Jansen said, clearly enjoying himself. "It means you don't want it at that price, but that she might want to try a better offer."
"Oh, well, thanks for telling me that going in," Wedge growled. "No wonder she wouldn't leave me alone."
"It's a big galaxy," Jansen said philosophically. "There's so much out there to learn. Come on, I ran into an old friend of yours over here."
"As long as he doesn't try to sell me something,"
Wedge grumbled, as Jansen led the way through the shoppers.
"Any word from the base?"
"Hardly," Jansen said over his shoulder. "The meeting only started half an hour ago. With a general of Bel Iblis's standing, they probably haven't even gotten through the preliminary compliments yet. Here we go. Hey, General!"
A few people away, a distinguished-looking man in a black cloak turned around.
"Well, well,"
Wedge said, easing through the passers-by and offering his hand.
"General Calrissian."
"He's just plain Calrissian now,"
Lando Calrissian corrected, tucking the Waku melon he was carrying under one arm and gripping Wedge's hand.
"My military days are long behind me. Good to see you again, Wedge."
"You too,"
Wedge said.
"What are you doing in this part of the galaxy?"
"Hoping for a chance to talk to General Bel Iblis,"
Lando said, nodding his head back toward the pyramidal launch towers of the New Republic starfighter base rising up behind the city.
"We have got to do something about that pirate activity we've been getting out near Varn."
"Been hitting your ore shipments, have they?"
Wedge asked.
"That and scaring away potential customers," Lando said. "I don't know if you knew I added a casino and observation gallery to the Deep Pockets."
"Sounds like a really big draw,"
Jansen said dryly.
"You'd be surprised how interesting underwater mining is to watch," Lando told him. "Actually, at full capacity, the casino could probably pay the overhead for the whole operation all by itself. But not if everyone's afraid to come there."
"Pirate gangs have been coming out of the stonework just about everywhere,"
Wedge agreed.
"Even in the core systems. Have you tried talking to Coruscant?"
"Till my voice gave out,"
Lando said sourly.
"Didn't gain me a thing. The bureaucratic bit sorters there are as bad as the ones we had under the Empire." Jansen snorted. Some of them are the same ones.
This latest policy reorganization should help,
Wedge said, trying to steer the conversation away from what was a permanent sore point for him and his rogue squadron comrades.
Shifting the bulk of political power back down to system and sector levels is definitely the way to go. The Empire already proved the centralized approach doesn't work.
He looked up at the clear blue sky overhead.
Funny, isn't it? How things wind up. I remember when being in a system this close to the edge of Imperial space meant you slept in your X-Wing. Instead, here we are, strolling along like we were on Sviverin or Ord Mantell.
I wouldn't get too overconfident if I were you, Jansen warned. The Empire isn't exactly dead yet. They could still deliver a pretty good punch if they wanted to. And they've looked like they were ready to throw in their cards before, Lando added. Remember what things were like just before Grand Admiral Thrawn came back from wherever it was he'd been hiding?
Wedge!
A voice called over the din.
Hey, Wedge!
Wedge peered over the crowd, caught a glimpse of tousled light brown hair, and lifted a hand.
Over here!
Who's that?
Lando asked, craning his neck to peer over the crowd.
His name's Tycho Selchu, Wedge told him. One of my rogue squadron people. I don't know if you ever met him.
Tycho reached them.
Hey, Wedge! You've got to come hear this guy,
he said, his voice and face dark.
Come on, he's over here.
He led them through the marketplace to a small booth with a wizened Moorish hunched over it.
Here he is,
Tycho said, gathering the others in front of the booth.
Wissimi, Proto.
Mirish Kavish Poril,
the Moorish wheezed.
Mishisht Kama, Polkivis me both.
Jansen whistled softly.
What is it?
Wedge asked.
He says new information's just been dug up about the destruction of Ka'amas,
Tycho said grimly,
and that it was the Bothans who were responsible.
Wedge stared at Tycho.
You must be joking,
he said.
Do I look like I'm joking?
Tycho bit out, a fire in his blue eyes.
Figures, doesn't it? Endor, Borlaeus, and now this! Take it easy,
Wedge said, putting some parade-ground steel into his voice.
Borlaeus wasn't really the Bothan's fault.
Tycho's shoulders shifted uneasily.
Not all of it, anyway,
he conceded grudgingly. Wedge looked at Lando.
Have you heard anything about fresh Ka'amas information?
Not a whisper,
Lando said, eyeing the Moorish suspiciously.
Ask him where he heard it.
Right.
Tycho spoke to the Moorish again, got an answer.
He says it came from the old recluse,
he translated.
He lives up in a cave in the High Tatmana. Apparently knows everything about what goes on in the galaxy.
Wedge turned and looked up at the Tatmana Mountains, rising in a saw-toothed crest in the distance on the opposite side of the city from the New Republic base. On the face of it, it was absurd to think that some old native hermit would have any idea what was even going on in the city down here, let alone in the larger galaxy above his mountains. But on the other hand, Wedge had hung around Luke Skywalker long enough to know that there were a lot of unexplainable things in the galaxy. Maybe this old recluse was one of those latent force users Luke was always trying to find. And it wasn't like they were exactly busy right now, anyway.
Ask him where we can find this old recluse,
he instructed Tycho.
You going up there?
Lando asked as Tycho began talking to the Moorish again.
What in the world's for?
Curiosity,
Wedge told him.
We've got time. The General won't be needing us for at least a few more hours. You coming?
Lando sighed.
Lead the way.
Leaning slightly into the steady wind, the three X-Wings settled smoothly onto the bluff overlooking the city.
Easy for you,
Lando muttered under his breath,
mentally gauging the chunk of space they'd left him to put the Lady Luck down onto. It would be tight, but pride alone dictated he not back up now. Muttering some more, he eased the yacht down toward the bluff. It was indeed a tight squeeze, made all the trickier by the wind, but he managed it without too much trouble, and more important, without any embarrassment. Dropping the engines into their standby settings, he climbed down the ladder just aft of the cockpit bridge and headed for the yacht's hatchway. Wedge, Jansen, and Tycho were waiting for him at the foot of the Lady Luck's ramp.
"Chilly up here,"
he commented, gripping the edge of his cloak to keep it from flapping.
"I hope the old recluse's cave is heated."
"At least it'll be out of this wind,"
Jansen agreed, pointing toward a narrow, 2-meter-high crack in the cliff face.
"That must be it. Let's go."
The cave was much deeper than Lando would have guessed from the relatively small size of the entrance. It was also surprisingly warm.
"Looks like a glow up ahead," Wedge said,
his voice sounding odd in the enclosed space.
"Around that bend."
"I wonder if we should announce ourselves," Lando said, glancing around uneasily.
Flying in cramped spaceships had never bothered him in the least, but walking down a narrow passageway with the top of a mountain weighing down on him was something else entirely. Or maybe it was that the place reminded him too much of the inside of Mount Tantus. Either way, as they rounded the corner, he found his right hand resting on the grip of his holstered blaster, which made the scene that opened up in front of them just that much more anticlimactic. Sitting at the back of a widened section of the cave was a single ancient Moorish, even older than the one they'd talked to at the booth, meditatively plucking the stretched wires of some kind of musical instrument. To his right was a squat military surplus worklight. To his left, an antiqued wood brazier. On both sides of the cave, only vaguely touched by the worklight's glow, were a collection of objects that were apparently the old recluse's household goods. At his back, not quite covering the cave's back wall, was a hand-decorated curtain of heavy-looking cloth. If the old recluse was surprised to see them, he didn't show it. He studied them for a moment in silence as they stepped to within a couple of meters of him, then dropped his gaze back to his instrument and muttered something in his own language.
"He's greeting us,"
Tycho translated.
"Sort of. He also demands to know what we want."
"Tell him we've heard he knows something about the destruction of Ka'amas," Wedge said. "We'd like to hear more."
"He'll want money," Jansen warned.
"Right," Tycho agreed. "Try offering him 50.
The Moorish stirred.
300,
he said in clear and nearly unaccented basic.
"This story is worth 300.
"Well, well," Wedge said dryly. "So much for local color. I thought they probably spoke more basic than they were letting on. I'll give you 100.
300,
the old recluse insisted.
"Or no story."
150, Wedge offered. "New Republic currency. All I have on me."
300, no less.
"I'll cover it,"
Lando spoke up, looking around the cave. There was something odd about this place, something that was triggering some very unpleasant memories.
"All right," Wedge sighed. 300 it is. "But this had better be worth it."
"It is,"
the old recluse assured him.
"Has the dark battle fleet assembled outside Ka'amas?"
And suddenly, it clicked in the back of Lando's mind. Stepping around behind the brazier, he got a grip on the edge of the curtain.
"Kali!"
the Moorish screeched, tossing aside his musical instrument and lunging toward the worklight. His hand darted beneath it.
"Freeze it!" Wedge snapped.
All three Rogue Squadron pilots had dropped into combat crouches, blasters in their hands, and steady on the Moorish.
"Bring your hand out," Wedge ordered. "Empty."
Slowly glaring at them, the old recluse pulled his hand back out. Jansen circled over to the worklight and crouched down beside it, coming up with a small but nasty-looking blaster.
All right, Wedge said as Jansen returned to Tycho's side. Now you just sit there and be good, and keep your hands where we can see them.
Holstering his blaster, he walked around behind his teammates and came over to Lando.
What did you find?
The source of his omniscience, Lando said grimly, pulling the curtain aside. Take a look.
Wedge whistled softly under his breath, and even Lando, who had more or less known what to expect, had to admit he was impressed.
Crammed into a wide floor-to-ceiling crack in the back wall of the cave was a fully functioning Imperial Communication Center, complete with encrypt-decrypt modules, the input jacks for a variety of droids and sensor feeds, a space planetary monitor module, and a self-contained Generations 3 power generator.
Well, well, Wedge commented. Nice find, Lando. What tipped you off?
The smell,
Lando told him, an involuntary shiver running through him.
Dusty electronics have a smell like nothing else in the universe. The Spa'arti cylinder chamber in the Mount Tantus storehouse was reeking with it.
Probably set this place up just before we took Morisham back from them, Jansen suggested. Must have used it to spy on the base. And for propaganda and incitement of the locals, Wedge said, pushing aside the curtain for a closer look. There's a direct feed to the Imperial News Service here, and a direct feed to Coruscant Hourly.
Might be interesting to have someone go back through the recent history records, Lando said. See if we can spot their hand in events.
Yes, Wedge agreed. They must have abandoned it in a hurry to have left this much stuff behind.
He trailed off, frowning at the space monitor display.
Tycho, get out to your X-Wing and give the base a call. Looks like we've got a Corellian Corvette coming in, broadcasting an Imperial ID.
Abruptly, he stiffened.
Belay that,
he snapped, dropping the curtain and charging past the old recluse.
Get to your fighters! Double time!
The others fell into step behind him, the group disappearing around the bend in the tunnel.
What is it?
The old recluse demanded anxiously.
You, human, what is it?
A single look at the display was all Lando needed.
It's an Imperial Star Destroyer, he said. It dropped in right behind the Corvette. Heading this way.
Lando!
Wedge's voice came from the Lady Luck's console.
You reading me?
Loud and clear,
Lando said, making one last adjustment to the speaker control.
Stay close. This freak mixing trick won't work against their jamming if we get too far apart.
Got it,
Lando said, eyeing the confused readouts from his comm board. His comm system was pretty much state-of-the-art, with a few exotic add-ons besides, but it wasn't really set up to deal with New Republic military frequencies and encrypts. But so far, the jury rig he'd thrown together on the fly seemed to be holding.
What's happening?
I got through to the base while you were getting set up,
Wedge said.
The rest of Rogue Squadron's on the way, along with every starfighter the base can scramble.
A couple of wings of X-Wings and A-Wings against an Imperial Star Destroyer? Terrific.
What about the Peregrine and the assault frigate that Admiral Vriss came in with?
The Peregrine's on its way, but it's having to come from around the far side of the planet,
Wedge said, an edge of contempt creeping into the cool professionalism in his voice.
The assault frigate, unfortunately, is going to be out of it. Apparently, they let the systems drop a little too far past standby.
Sloppy. Who's in command?
A committee of Bagmims. The crew is mostly Bagmims, humans, and Povenarians.
Bagmims are pretty good fighters when they get riled.
They should have stayed more riled then,
Wedge said.
Right now, they're just a waste of air.
Too late to worry about it now, Lando said,
carefully refraining from reminding Wedge about his own earlier comments on how much more relaxed things had become.
What's the plan?
We try to slow him down,
Wedge said.
The Peregrine's on its way, and the General's got 2 Star Cruisers coming from Haverling. Until they get here, we're on our own.
The 3 X-Wings and the yacht rose above the curve of Morishim's horizon. And there they were. The awe-inspiring bulk of the Imperial Star Destroyer, with the corvette leading it toward the planet. And then, Lando frowned.
Wedge!
I see it,
Wedge murmured.
Rogue 7, give me a fast analysis. No mistake, Rogue Leader,
Tycho's voice came promptly.
Those aren't accidental misfires. The Star Destroyer's definitely targeting the corvette. The corvette's running flank speed with full aft deflector shields. She's being chased, all right. They're jamming her transmissions, too,
Jansen added.
Course projection shows she's making straight for the edge of the base's energy shield. Looks like we've got a theft and defection on our hands. Could be,
Wedge said cautiously.
It could also be a trick to get us to let an unexamined ship in under the energy shield. So what do we do?
Jansen asked.
Let's try running a little interference. Rogue 2, Rogue 5, cut in around the corvette's starboard side and see if you can draw some of the Star Destroyer's attention. I'll take the other side. Watch out for tractor beams. They may try to pull the corvette in.
Copy, Rogue Leader.
The 2 X-Wings swerved smoothly away from Wedge and Lando.
What about me?
Lando asked.
Better stay back here,
Wedge told him, putting on a burst of speed of his own.
That yacht isn't designed for this sort of maneuvering. Anyway, we may need you to act as relay between us and our reinforcements.
The words were barely out of his mouth when there was a sort of muffled flash from the corvette, accompanied by a cloud of debris.
Topside sensor group's been hit,
Jansen reported.
Internal fire. Probably gonna have to shut down the main reactor core.
Which meant no drive, no shields, and no hope of escape. Lando swore under his breath, keying a secondary comm system to scan across the channels. A static hissed out at him at each of the frequencies the Imperials were jamming.
Tractor beam activated,
Tycho said tightly.
Making connection. They got her. Incoming to aft,
Jansen cut in.
The rest of Rogue Squadron, plus 3 wings of A-wings and 2 of X-wings. ETA, about 4 minutes.
Wedge's sigh was a softer echo of the jamming hiss.
Too little, too late. Break off. There's nothing we can do to help them now.
Lando looked out at the corvette, tapping a frustrated fist gently against the edge of his control board. Muzzled and helpless, both, the corvette would be taken or destroyed without anyone knowing who they were or what they were doing here. Unless...
Wedge, he called. I've got an idea. Fire up all the transmission frequencies the 3 you can handle. Full power, with all the encryption you can put on them. Maybe we can dilute their jamming enough to at least get something out of the corvette.
Worth a try,
Wedge said.
Let's do it, Rogues.
Lando swiveled around to the comm board, keying in one of those exotic add-ons he'd spent all that good money for. This probably wouldn't work. Almost certainly wouldn't work, in fact. And the effort alone might easily irritate the Imperials into taking a lethal swipe at him. But at least it was doing something. He stared at the comm readings, holding his breath. And then, to even his gambler's amazement, there was a flicker of something through the static.
Keep it up!
He shouted to Wedge and the others, keying madly at the board. The flicker strengthened, faded, strengthened again. It cut off suddenly. Lando looked up just in time to catch a final glimpse of pseudo-motion as the Star Destroyer vanished into hyperspace.
Well, that's that,
Tycho said.
I wasn't watching, Lando said. Did they take the corvette with them?
Pulled it into the bay and took straight off,
Wedge told him.
You get anything?
I don't know.
Lando keyed for replay.
Let's see.
There was a burst of static. And then, almost buried beneath the hissing, a few faint words could be heard.
This is Colonel J. for special envoy from Nolgan. Sent here, contact General Iblis. Concern. Listen. Truth. We are a Empire and the New Republic under attack. Traitorous elf. The Empire. Do not expect survive if the Nuri to hold solutions. Admiral Pell. They come in a bay. Mining incident. Seeking to meet with Peeting. This is Grishmel. We.
The recording ended.
Not much there,
Wedge commented.
No, Lando conceded. What now?
You better head back and get the recording to General Bell Iblis. I think we'll stay out here a little while longer.
In case this was just the first act? Lando suggested.
You never know.
Lando gazed out at where the Corvette had lost its race for safety, an unpleasant chill running up his spine. The whole thing was very similar, disturbingly similar, in fact, to the race Princess Leia Organa's consular ship had lost to Darth Vader's Star Destroyer above the planet Tatooine nearly 2 decades ago. It had been a pivotal point in the struggle against the Empire's tyranny, though no one had known it at the time. And now, here over Morishim, the same scene had just been played out again. Could there have been something of equal consequence behind it?
Wedge?
Yes?
There weren't by any chance...
Lando hesitated, afraid this was going to sound silly.
Any escape pods jettisoned from the Corvette?
Actually, that's the first thing I thought of,
Wedge told him soberly.
But no, there weren't.
Didn't think so,
Lando said, shaking away the memories of the past. History never truly repeated itself, after all. Odds were that Jansen had already called it a simple theft and defection. The odds also were that none of them would ever know for sure. Officially, the planet was named Munilinst. Unofficially, it was known to many as Moneyland. And if Bastion was the political center of the Empire, Munilinst was its financial core. The reasons for its status were many and varied, a long history that dated back well into the days of the Old Republic. The fact that it still retained its role in these darker times was as much a triumph of inertia and habit as it was the two Golan III defense platforms tracing their lazy orbits high overhead. Standing at the conference room window, Pellion glanced up as one of the platforms passed in front of Munilist's sun, momentarily dimming its light. Back when the Imperial capital was moved to Bastion, he remembered Moff Deesra had tried to get those two Golan IIIs transferred there as well, arguing that the Empire's governmental center deserved the protection more than the credit shufflers did. It had been one of Deesra's rare miscalculations, and one of his most embarrassing political defeats. Behind Pellion, someone coughed discreetly.
Yes?
Pellion asked, turning again to face the table. All 6 of the senior officers gathered around the table were looking back at him.
I presume, Admiral,
High General Sut Ramek said quietly,
that this is not simply a trial suggestion. You and the Moffs have already agreed on this offer, haven't you?
For a moment, Pellion studied the other's face. General Ramek, commander of one of the Golans up there, was the senior man of the Munilinst defense setup, in experience and respect as well as in rank. If he chose to resist the proposed peace agreement, the others would most likely fall in line behind him. But no. The question hadn't been a challenge, merely a question.
The Moffs have approved it, yes,
he said.
For what it's worth, they were no more pleased by the idea than any of the rest of us are. I thought you were the one who made the proposal.
General Jaren Kite put in, his voice and eyes dark with suspicion.
How can you say now that you oppose it? I didn't say I opposed it.
Pelion corrected him.
I said I didn't like it. But in my professional judgment, we simply have no other options left.
I was under the impression we had revolutionary new systems and equipment ready to come online,
Ramek said. With perfect timing, one of the lights on Pelion's comm blinked on.
Some of those systems haven't proved as workable as their designers had hoped,
Pelion said, stepping to his seat and leaning over to tap the confirmation button.
As for the equipment, some of it has been tainted by decidedly treasonous activity.
Across from Pelion, the conference door slid open, and a lean man, wearing the traditional Munilinsti banker's shawl and pendant, stepped inside. His reaction to the room full of officers might have been interesting, but Pelion wasn't watching him. His eyes were instead on the officers themselves, as their expressions of surprise or indignation at his veiled accusation were interrupted by this unexpected intrusion. They turned, most of them obviously irritated, to see who it was who had presumed to intrude on fleet business. And midway down the left side of the table, General Kite twitched. It wasn't a big reaction, little more than a twitch of the head and a flicker of shock across his face before he got himself back under control. But set against the backdrop of the other's more or less indifferent curiosity, it stood out like the guide light on a landing bay.
Ah, Lord Greyman,
Pelion said, focusing on the banker at last.
Thank you for coming. If you'll wait in the other room there, I'll be with you shortly.
As you wish, Admiral Pelion,
Greyman said. His eyes, Pelion noted, flicked once to Kite as he crossed to the inner chamber and disappeared inside.
And what was that all about?
Ramek asked. The man was shrewd, all right. Clearly he'd recognized that the banker's interruption wasn't entirely a coincidence.
I was speaking of treason,
Pelion said, waving a hand toward the inner chamber.
Lord Greyman is one of the threads in that web.
A fresh ripple of surprise ran around the rest of the table. But Ramek himself didn't even twitch.
You can prove this? He demanded.
Enough of it,
Pelion said.
He's one of the money men helping funnel Imperial funds to a consortium that's building the prey birds that are now supplementing the more traditional Tie-class starfighters aboard our ships.
I don't see any treason in that,
someone snorted.
Seems to me that the Empire's getting its money's worth with those prey birds.
The treason is in the fact that the deal has been made outside proper channels,
Pelion said.
And in the fact that certain high Imperial officials are siphoning off a significant percentage of those funds for their own personal gain.
Deliberately, he turned his gaze on Kite.
And in the fact that the deal includes the supplying of Imperial equipment and personnel to various pirate gangs.
Kite held his gaze without flinching, but his face paled just noticeably. Pelion knew all right, and now Kite knew that he knew.
And how do you expect your treaty with the New Republic to stop this?
Ramek asked.
Cooperation and open lines of communication would enable us to track down the participants more efficiently,
Pelion said.
And those participants would no longer be able to pretend they were merely doing the Empire's business in their own, shall we say, creative way.
Then you suspect some in the fleet are involved?
One of the others asked.
I don't suspect,
Pelion said.
I know.
For a long moment, no one spoke. Pelion let the silence linger and harden, then gestured to the data pads in front of them.
But that's not the issue here today. The issue is the proposed peace treaty, and whether you will support it. I suggest we adjourn for an hour, so that you'll have time to consider all the ramifications. Discuss it among yourselves, if you like. I'll be here if you have any questions you wish to ask privately.
He looked at each of them in turn.
At the end of that hour, we'll reconvene, and I'll expect your answers. Any final questions? Very well, then. Dismissed.
He turned again to the window, his back to the table, as they gathered their data pads and data cards and exited quietly from the room. The door slid shut, and Pelion took a careful breath.
Your comments?
He asked, turning around again. Ramek hadn't moved from his seat.
I disagree completely, the High General said bluntly. The New Republic is going to self-destruct. You know it, and I know it. The only questions are how violent the explosion will be, and whether the trigger will be this Ka'amas thing we keep hearing about, or something else. There's no need for us to humiliate ourselves in front of aliens and alien lovers this way.
I understand your position,
Pelion said.
Is that your final word?
Ramek's thin lips compressed briefly.
I don't support your treaty, Admiral, he said, standing up. But I'm an Imperial officer, and I will obey my superiors. You and the Morphs have agreed. If and when the order to cease hostilities is given, I will obey it.
Some of the weight on Pelion's shoulders eased a bit.
Thank you, General,
he said quietly.
Thank my family and its history of proud service, Ramek countered. They're the ones who installed the sense of duty and loyalty in me.
He dropped his gaze to the table and set about gathering together his data cards.
Do you think the New Republic will accept your offer of a meeting?
We'll find out soon enough,
Pelion said.
Colonel Vermel should be reaching the Morishim system just about now.
Yes,
Ramek murmured. He started for the door, paused and turned back.
You're certain there are pirate gangs involved in all this?
There's no doubt at all,
Pelion assured him.
From what I've been able to piece together, they're being hired to attack specified New Republic shipments. They get the booty, the Empire gets a degree of confusion and consternation in the New Republic. And the Shadow Partners, knowing which shipments are going to be hit, make money on the business and commodity exchanges.
Ramek shrugged.
Aside from that last, it sounds like perfectly reasonable privateer activity.
Perhaps,
Pelion conceded.
The problem is that the ultimate decisions on which shipments are to be hit are coming from the Shadow Partners, not the High Command or Imperial Intelligence. And there are also strong indications that the sleeper cells Grand Admiral Thrawn set up are being raided to provide crewers for the gangs.
If those alleged sleeper cells really exist,
Ramek rumbled.
I've never been convinced of that myself.
If the troopers aren't from the sleeper cells, then the conspirators are getting them from somewhere else,
Pelion said.
The only other choice is that they're siphoning them off from the regular line forces.
Ramek's face hardened.
If they're doing that, I'll personally help you flay the perpetrators. We don't have enough troopers and crewers as it is.
His eyes narrowed slightly.
And which of us do you suspect of being in on it with Lord Greyman?
General Kite was the only one who reacted to his entrance,
Pelion said.
As such, he's my prime suspect. With luck, he may panic and lead my intelligence team to some of the others involved.
Kite won't panic, Ramek said. But he might think it wise to alert them.
Either way will suit me,
Pelion said.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I need to spend a few minutes with Lord Greyman.
Pulling on another thread of the web?
Pelion smiled grimly.
Something like that. I'll see you and the others in an hour.
Very well, sir.
For a moment, Ramek studied his face.
I'd advise you to be careful, though. Every web